The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan Lewis brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider and the papal news highlights of the week. But first, I want to urge you not to move after the news segment, because in place of an interview, I've prepared a special on a wonderful multi-century tradition in Rome during Lent, the celebrated Lenten Station Churches. What are they? What's their history? Why are they special in Lent? You will definitely want to come to Rome sometime to participate, even for a few days, in this tradition. But today you can learn a bit more. Now to the news. On Sunday, March 17th at the Angelus, Pope Francis appealed for renewed gestures of peace and prayer to combat hatred and violence following the massacres at two mosques in New Zealand. Those thoughts came after he spoke of the morning's gospel on the Transfiguration. Speaking to the faithful in St. Peter's Square, Francis said, "In these days, in addition to the pain of wars and conflicts that do not cease to afflict humanity, there have been the victims of the horrible attack against two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. I pray for the dead and injured and their families. I am close to our Muslim brothers and all that community. I renew my invitation for prayer and gestures of peace to combat hatred and violence." He then asked everyone in the square to observe a moment of silence with him for the victims. The man charged with the attacks appeared in court Saturday amid strict security. Grief-stricken relatives on Sunday were anxiously awaiting for authorities to release the remains of those who were killed. 34 injured victims remained at a Christchurch hospital, where officials said 12 were in critical condition. A 4-year-old girl at a children's hospital in Auckland was also listed as critical. On Monday, March 18th, Pope Francis welcomed members of Italy's Court of Audit, urging them to use their positions to serve the common good. The Court of Audit is a constitutional institution in Italy that has consultative, review, and jurisdictional functions, including monitoring public finances and the administration of the state. Francis reminded his guests that their institution incarnates an ethic aimed at promoting the common good. This, he says, is not only an ideological concept, but one that is linked to the conditions of the full development of all citizens. It's for this reason that the state is called upon to be the defender of each person's natural human rights. He underscored the importance of applying three main concepts to their work in order to obtain the common good: the fight against corruption, a control of expenses, and attention to the poor. Also Monday, Pope Francis welcomed representatives of the different expressions of the Chameleon family. "I greet you with affection," he said, "and I ask the Lord to preserve his sense of humor. You will never have a gastric ulcer. You are constantly engaged in loving and generous donation to the sick, carrying out a precious mission in the church and in society alongside the suffering. When disease disturbs and at times upturns our lives, then we feel the strong need to have a compassionate and competent brother or sister beside us, one who consoles us, supports us, and helps us recover the precious good of health, or one who accompanies us until the end of our final meeting with the Lord." Wednesday, March 20th, at the General Audience, the Holy Father urged prayers and support for the many victims of Cyclone Idai that has caused widespread destruction and flooding in the Southeast African nations of Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. In recent days, great floods have sowed mourning and devastation in various areas of Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. I express my pain and closeness to those dear people. With these heartfelt words, Pope Francis expressed his condolences for the families of the more than 350 people killed by the cyclone, as well as his solidarity with the millions of people affected. The powerful storm made landfall on the coast of Mozambique last Thursday before spreading death and destruction halfway across Southeast Asia. Pope Francis made the appeal at the Wednesday General Audience in St. Peter's Square. "I entrust the many victims and their families to the mercy of God, and I implore comfort and support for those affected by this calamity." The appeal followed his continuing catechesis on the Our Father, focusing this week on the words of the third invocation, "Thy will be done." "God is not ambiguous," began Francis. "He is not hidden behind riddles. He has not planned the future of the world in an indecipherable manner." He said, "We can see the will of the Father expressed in the words of Jesus. God wills to seek and to save that which was lost. This, the Pope said, without any shadow of doubt, the salvation of all human beings, of each one of us individually, this is the will of God. Because of his love for us, God knocks on the door of our hearts in order to draw us to himself, to lead us forward along the path of salvation. God, the Pope said, is close to each one of us with his love in order to lead us by the hand to salvation. Also Wednesday, Vive Cristo Esperanza Nuestra, Christ Lives Our Hope. This is the title of the opening in the original text in Spanish of the post-synodal apostolic exhortation in the form of a letter to young people that Pope Francis will sign on March 25th, Solemnity of the Annunciation, during his visit to the Marian Shrine of Loreto. The Pope intends, with this gesture, said a Vatican communique, to entrust to the Virgin Mary the document that completes the work of the Synod of Bishops held in the Vatican in October 2018 on the theme Young People, the Faith, and Vocational Discernment. The text of the exhortation will subsequently be published in other languages with the signature of 25 March 2019 and presented, as is customary for a magisterial document, during a press conference in the Holy See Press Office. Those details have yet to be given. Thursday, March 21st, Pope Francis received President Marie-Louise Colliero Preca of Malta. She and her team later met Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin, along with Monsignor Antoine Camilleri, Undersecretary for Relations with States. During the cordial discussions, the two sides evoked the constructive relations that unite the Holy See and the Republic of Malta, according to a statement released by the press office. They also discussed the collaboration between the Catholic Church and the state in favor of the human, social, cultural, and spiritual progress of the population, in particular the young, in the light of the centuries-old contribution that Catholicism has offered the country. Also Thursday, Pope Francis received an audience, members of the Italian Federation of Pediatricians. In prepared remarks, he urged them to commit themselves to an inclusive form of health care that respects the human body. For more than 40 years, the Italian Federation of Pediatricians has supported over 5,500 family pediatricians, offering them expertise from a professional and moral point of view in the sphere of welfare and social security, as well as in the legal and economic fields. The Federation has distinguished itself for its contribution to the foundation of the Italian National Health Service, and over the years has implemented countless health initiatives and has been involved in the upgrading of services offered to citizens. Pope Francis praised their work with babies, children, and adolescents, and noted their commitment in the area of training and education. He encouraged the Federation members to listen to their young patients and to provide a sense of security to parents. Friday, March 22nd, Pope Francis attended the second Lenten sermon given by the preacher of the papal household. Later in the morning, he received a delegation of parliamentarians from the Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic on the occasion of the 1150th anniversary of the death of St. Cyril, apostle to the Slavs. He also received the letters of credence from the new Turkish ambassador to the Holy See. And also Friday, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Secretary of State, sent a telegram in the Pope's name to Mosul, Iraq, noting that His Holiness was deeply saddened to learn of all who lost their lives following the tragic sinking of a ferry in the Tigris River in Mosul. Expressing his prayerful solidarity with those who mourn, His Holiness commends the deceased to the mercy of the Almighty and prays for the local authorities and emergency personnel. Upon the whole Iraqi nation, Pope Francis invokes the divine blessings of healing, strength, and consolation. Well, those are the many news highlights of the week, but now stay here and travel to Rome with me to visit the Lenten Station Churches. Welcome to the Q&A portion of Vatican Insider. I've been asked a number of times about the history of papal coats of arms, and actually, it's a long and very colorful, wonderful history, but I can kind of give you just the nutshell version today. Now, if you live in or have visited Rome, you may have noticed that the facades of many churches feature one or more coats of arms above or near the main entrance. These signal one of two things, or very possibly both. The crest or coat of arms might be that of a pope who has visited the church and said Mass, and or might be the coat of arms of a cardinal whose titular church it is, living or deceased. Papal coats of arms are the personal coats of arms of popes and have been a tradition since the late Middle Ages. If a pope came from nobility or a family that had its coat of arms, often that was used. Today, when a bishop is named, he designs a coat of arms. If he becomes a cardinal, he usually keeps it, and the same thing if he becomes pope, although he might tweak it in some manner as a sign of what he intends the papacy to be. The last pope who was elected without already being a bishop was Pope Gregory XVI in 1831, and the last who was not even a priest when elected was Pope Leo X in 1513. Papal coats of arms are traditionally shown with an image of the papal tiara and the keys of Peter as an external ornament of the escutcheon, what you and I would call the shield. The tiara came into use with Pope John XXII, 1316 to 1334. Benedict, however, changed that when he became pope in 2005, placing the episcopal mitre in place of the tiara. Pope Francis has maintained that. Adding the keys behind the shield came with Pope Callistus III, 1455 to 1458. Now the two keys, gold on the right crossing with silver on the left, are said to represent the power to bind and loose on earth, silver, and in heaven, gold. The gold key signifies that the power reaches to heaven, and the silver key that it extends to all the faithful on earth. Now Pope Francis's coat of arms has the tiara and two keys, and on a blue shield are a gold star representing the Virgin Mary, what looks like a grape-like plant called the spikenard. This is associated with Saint Joseph. And then we have the IHS emblem. This is the symbol of the Jesuits and reflects the Greek word for Jesus. So now it might not be everything you can know about papal coats of arms, but it's everything you should know. Come back next week to the Q&A, and by the way, email yours to me at jonesrome@gmail.com. Have a great weekend.
Encounter with Dan Demite and Patrick Rice is our new radio show for young adults.
The Holy Spirit is about a new and exciting work in the young church of today. On Encounter, we bring young adults the life-changing testimonies of ordinary people that launch them into lives of extraordinary mission. Their testimonies bring faith and power into the lives of everyone who listens.
Encounter with Dan Demite and Patrick Rice. The spiritual awakening begins tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
60 Seconds with Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen.
Turn over the pages of sacred scripture. What do you find? You find a record of men to whom God has spoken. And you'll also find a record of men who listened to him. In other words, scripture is fulfilled in concrete, living dialogues. Now, men do not always want that dialogue with God. At one time, they desire it. At another time, they fear it. Adam was afraid when God called him in the garden. Cain was afraid when God spoke to him. Moses was afraid before the burning bush. When you and I have a dialogue with God, what makes it up? One thing that makes it up is, first of all, a consciousness of our own sin. And the other is the voice of God urging us to confess it, to seek his mercy.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider as we continue on our Lenten journey. In fact, this week I've prepared a very special program for you in what is normally the interview segment. We're going to go on a mini pilgrimage of sorts as we visit the Lenten station churches in Rome. They are very special churches that tell a beautiful story over the 40 days of Lent, a story found only in Rome. Every year on Ash Wednesday and the start of Lent, popes process from the Benedictine Church of Sant'Anselmo on the Aventine Hill to the nearby Dominican Basilica of Santa Sabina, thus renewing a centuries-old Roman tradition of celebrating Mass at what are known here as Lenten Station or Stational Churches. At Sant'Anselmo, there's always a moment of prayer, followed by the penitential procession to the Basilica of Santa Sabina. Traditionally joining the Pope in that procession are cardinals, archbishops, bishops, the Benedictine monks of Sant'Anselmo, the Dominican fathers of Santa Sabina, and the lay faithful. In Santa Sabina, the Holy Father then presides at Mass, and after his homily, there's the rite of the blessing and imposition of ashes. In conclusion, the Pope imparts his apostolic blessing. The elegant Aventine neighborhood overlooks the Circus Maximus and the Baths of Caracalla in Rome. Situated on the Aventine's Piazza Pietro di Liria, the Basilica of Santa Sabina, chronologically the first Lenten station church, was established at the start of the 5th century by a priest named Peter, who is from Illyria. In 1222, Pope Honorius III gave the adjacent ancient turreted palace of the Crescenzi family to the Dominicans as a monastery, and in fact, over the years, both Saints Dominic and Thomas Aquinas lived here. Modifications and additions in the 16th century basilica altered its appearance. In the early 1900s, the church was restored to its original design. It has three aisles and 24 fluted Corinthian columns. Little is left, unfortunately, of the original mosaics. In the middle of the nave is the mosaic tombstone dedicated to Munoz de Zamora, the Master General of the Dominicans and a biographer of St. Dominic. Adjacent to the church is the cloister built by St. Dominic in 1220 and restored between 1936 and 1939. Now, the practice of station churches had its origin in the first centuries of Christianity, when most of the early popes celebrated the liturgy on special days at special churches in the Eternal City. This eventually became principally a Lenten devotion. In his liturgical reform, Pope St. Gregory the Great, who reigned from 590 to 604, established a station church for each day of Lent, thus making the whole season a pilgrimage on the path to conversion while preparing for Easter. The first station church every year is always Santa Sabina, where the Pope celebrates Ash Wednesday Mass. In the early days of the church, Lent was a time in which catechumens began their journey of faith and conversion prior to receiving baptism. Now, the word station is associated with two Latin words, stare, meaning to stand, and statio, meaning standing still or a stationary place. In early times, the celebrations began with the clergy and congregation gathering at one spot called the collecta, and thus processing to the station church, the statio, while reciting litanies and other prayers. The Eucharist was then celebrated at the station church, as it was on Ash Wednesday by the Pope at Santa Sabina. Unfortunately, the custom began to fall into disuse, and it stopped when the papacy was in Avignon from 1309 to 1377. It was revived by St. John the 23rd only in 1959. The 7 a.m. Masses in English at a different church each day in Rome have become a gathering spot for English-speaking Catholics. Any given day of Lent will find priests, Roman seminarians, and religious from around Rome and embassy personnel, including ambassadors, some of whom speak English only as a second or even a third language. You'll also find university students and other members of the laity all gathered together to celebrate the Eucharist. Masses in other language, including German, Latin, and Italian, are celebrated at other times in the station churches. Now, not long after John the 23rd revived this custom, the rector, staff, and seminarians of the Pontifical North American College, the American Seminary in Rome, began to frequent the Lenten station churches, attending Mass each morning at 7 in English in the assigned church of the day. Now, all these years later, they still observe this Lenten custom and on most days walk to the church from the college located on Janiculum Hill. On some days, that is an arduous undertaking and means a very early wake-up alarm. In addition to the station churches, a long-standing Roman custom is to visit the four major or papal basilicas, St. Peter's, St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major, and St. Paul's outside the walls. This is in addition to three more important basilicas in what are commonly called the Seven Church Walk. The three additional basilicas are Holy Cross in Jerusalem, St. Lawrence outside the walls, also known as St. Lawrence al Verano, and St. Sebastian. The Seven Church Walk is traditionally done on the Wednesday of Holy Week. Most of the 40 station churches visited during Lent get spruced up for their special morning mass. Some extra dusting and polishing may be in store for these ancient places of worship, and relics, often hidden from public view, may be brought out for veneration by the faithful. And by the way, interestingly enough, 25 of the 40 churches were once the homes of Romans who converted to Christianity. Now here's some of the relics you'll be able to see if you follow the station churches in Rome. San Agostino in Campo Marzio. Above the main altar, there's an image of a Byzantine Madonna that came from the Church of Santa Sofia in Constantinople, modern Istanbul. In the Chapel of St. Monica, we find the remains of St. Monica, mother of St. Augustine. The relics of many other saints are found below the main altar and near other altars. Now let's go to Santa Cecilia in Trastevere. The body of St. Cecilia lies in the crypt, sarcophagi with the bodies of Saints Valerian, Tiburcio, and Massima are found here, as is a sarcophagus with the bodies of Saints Pope Lucio I and Pope Urban. And then there's the historical San Clemente, run by Irish Dominicans. We are looking at millennia-old church history here. The present basilica built just before the year 1100 during the height of the Middle Ages. And beneath the present basilica is a 4th century basilica that had been converted out of the home of a Roman nobleman, part of which had, in the 1st century, briefly served as an early church. Now, the church was built over the home of Pope St. Clement, the 3rd pope after St. Peter. His relics are found beneath the main altar, along with an arm of St. Ignatius, the bishop of Antioch. The cross in the center of the mosaic in the apse contains fragments of the true cross. In the underground part of the church is the sepulchre of St. Cyril, apostle to the Slavs, whereas his actual relics are in the upper church in a chapel on the right side. Now we're going to go to the church of San Marcello. The remains of Pope St. Marcello are in an urn beneath the main altar. In the 4th chapel on the left, in an urn in the altar, are the relics of Saints Felicity and her presumed 7 sons. In the chapel of the crucifix are relics of, among others, Saint Longinus, whose sword pierced the side of Christ at the crucifixion. Relics of many other saints are in this church. Now let's move on to Santa Maria in Via Latta. Tradition says that Saints Peter and Paul and the evangelist Saints John and Luke at one point spent some time in a residence here, and that Saint Paul wrote his letters to the Hebrews here, and Saint Luke his Acts of the Apostles. Now, the last church I want to talk about today of the many in Rome with treasures is San Pietro in Vincoli, Saint Peter's in Chains. In a beautiful glass and brass reliquary are the chains that bound St. Peter when he was in prison in Rome. These are just a few of the many great treasures you will find as you live the Lenten Station Churches pilgrimage. Now, in 2012, there was an interesting tidbit about the Holy Father. For the first time, Lent was featured in daily messages offered by Benedict XVI on Twitter in 6 languages. The messages came via @Pope2UVatican as the official papal Twitter account. Right now, of course, that is @Pontifex, and that was only launched on December 12th of that same year, 2012. During his 11-year tenure as rector of the Pontifical North American College in Rome, Monsignor James Cecchio, now Bishop Cecchio of Metuchen in New Jersey, spoke to us about the station churches. He said, one of the blessings of spending Lent in Rome and at the Pontifical North American College is that we are able to participate in the ancient tradition of the Lenten stational churches. The early Christians began to venerate the places of burial or death of the early martyrs, and eventually this led to the custom of having processions to these sacred sites. By the 4th century, said Bishop Cecchio, historians tell us each day during Lent, the Bishop of Rome would visit a different church in the city of Rome to venerate the saints and celebrate Mass with the local faithful. This tradition endured for centuries. During the past few decades, the North American College has continued this tradition, as each day of Lent, the seminarians and priests are offered the opportunity to go on pilgrimage early in the morning to one of the churches of Rome for veneration of the saints and for Holy Mass, and to join many other lay faithful, priests, sisters, and seminarians from the city. Monsignor Cecchio added that for us, as we continue on the path of our priestly formation as seminarians or ongoing formation as priests, we are reminded as we visit these churches honoring the different saints who have gone before us, that each one of us, in addition to the call to priesthood, needs to examine our response to the call to be saints, the universal call to holiness. After all, we all want to be good and loving priests of Jesus Christ for service of his church, but ultimately we desire to spend eternal life with him in heaven. We need to become saints. Visiting the saints inspires us to answer this call wholeheartedly. Each day in Lent, said Monsignor Cecchio, be assured that we pilgrims here in Rome will carry the intentions of our families and friends with us to the station churches and the sites of the early martyrs and saints. Well, you too, all of you listening to this program, can participate in a station church pilgrimage. You can attend Mass in Rome at the designated church if you're here during Lent. And if you're not in Rome, you can join the staff and seminarians of the North American College each day on their Lenten pilgrimage by going to www.pnac.org. Each day you'll find information on and the history of that day's station church. And, if you're in Rome, directions on how to get there. Well, that's it for the station churches. God bless you. I hope you have a beautiful and meaningful Lent.